Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live Chat Room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio. Weekends with Alan Miller on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. Firstly, a big shout to everyone who is rallying in Redhill today in Surrey, saying no to ULEZ. The Coalition to Stop ULEZ incorporates many different political parties and independents, as well as all the campaigners from both around and inside London and on the outskirts and outside London. That's at stopules.net. It's looking like we're going to be winning this. There's a judicial review on, but at the same time, the public are having their voices heard together. It's really important that people get involved. They're doing that locally. Next week is a big rally outside the BBC in London. And beyond this, Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, who refuses, it seems, to engage democratically, ignores the consultation and the respondents, then has a very, very skewed poll that they kind of manage and target marketing towards. But the majority of people are firmly opposed to this, as consistently as demonstrated, and seems to be absolutely unwilling to listen to a democratic response. Now he's saying, well, let's look further. And it looks like in the mayoral office, they've already started taking measures to have pay per mile, because, of course, there's only a certain amount of people that are not compliant with their cars. That's a large amount for them, and it's going to be very costly. And we know 50% of vans outside London are not compliant. But there's already plans afoot, which is why maybe all these AMPR cameras were purchased before the consultation, because that's the intention all round. With some digital ID, there we go. That will do it, won't it? Some digital ID, some tracking and constant surveillance, and more charging and limits. No ambition for innovation, no transformation, more freedom for us. No listening to the public, to the demos, but managerial technocrats imposing things on us. So it's great that people are rallying. A big shout to the Coalition to Stop ULEZ and Action Against ULEZ that are out there rallying currently. Interestingly, people will note that the Royal Albert Hall yesterday at the proms opening, the intervention by Just Stop Oil, I was watching just earlier Jane Toole talking about it, saying we don't have time for votes. We don't have time for elections. We don't have time for that kind of lobbying. It's the end of the world. It's genocide. Anyone who likes fossil fuels. And it really kind of sums up the approach that some that are supportive of a really sort of dominant net zero approach is that there's no time for the messy, awkward nature of democracy, of trying to win hearts and minds, of convincing our fellow citizens and colleagues, family and friends, or others about the merit of our arguments, about the validity of our view. Instead, we're just going to do these things to you. And that's as true of a discussion around net zero as it is in some other areas that we've seen. And we've just heard from Don't Divide Us about how some of these measures are being imposed in education and cancelling on the campus and the academy and in work life has become increasingly popular, although there have been fightbacks against allowing that to happen. But in a similar way, the discussion around gender and biological rights, about what that means for women and the trans community, and then trans activists, is not necessarily the trans community, trans activists, and how attempts to silence and suffocate and shut people down have become more profound and more shrill. And we've seen recently that an attempt to shut down LGB Alliance charity at court. And we're very fortunate now to have a co-founder of LGB Alliance with us, Bev Jackson, who's committed a lot of her time and life towards this, to talk about a bit of the backdrop, the history about how we got here, and also about that from a campaigning point of view. Bev, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks very much for having me on. Very happy to be here, Alan. And I'd like to start by saying thank you, everyone around the world who has been supporting us so incredibly strongly right from the beginning. From the very time we started, we were absolutely deluged by messages from all around the world of support and thanks that we have founded. And that was back in October 2019. So I'm really so happy that we've had this support. I don't think we could have managed without it.
And that's encouraging to hear. But it's become very, I mean, just why don't you take us through that journey just to start off with about how, you know, where things began there in this context and to get to here, if you would.
Well, I think that everyone knows that the gay rights movement has made fantastic achievements over the years. And I was one of the people right at the beginning of it, because I was actually a founding member of the UK Gay Liberation Front way back in 1970. So that's a long time ago. And over the decades, we've seen much more public acceptance of people who are attracted to others of the same sex, gays and lesbians. And we've seen fantastic changes in the law to allow people to marry each other, gays and lesbian, same-sex marriage and adoption and so on. And the public acceptance has increased fantastically. And then you see something which happened early, much earlier in the United States than I think it did most other places, that it was almost as if the gay rights movement had run out of steam and needed a new focus in order to maybe to make money and to ensure their, you know, that they could stay active. And so what you see is that I'm going to focus on the UK, Stonewall, a big organization which did lots of work for gay rights, was really fantastic in getting rid of that terrible Section 28 way back in the 1990s, and then has done lots of work in making sure equal age of consent and eventually gay marriage and all this. It did fantastic work. And then in 2014, there was a big shift. And this is the same shift that's been happening all around the world. But I'm going to look at Stonewall. In 2014, Ruth Hunt was appointed CEO of Stonewall. Now, before she was appointed, lots of people, you know, were looking at the different candidates. And, you know, I know that several, a group of lesbians, for instance, said to Ruth Hunt, I hope you're not thinking of adding the T to LGB because that causes actual confusion and is detrimental to the rights of lesbians. And she said, no, I'm not going to be doing that. So that was great. And then she was appointed and she completely reneged on that. She seems to have received, or Stonewall received, something like $100,000 from the Arcus Foundation precisely to add the T. So you think adding the T, well, okay, you're just adding something on and you're helping trans people along. No, it isn't like that. What has happened is that the T that has been added and all these other letters, the Q and the A and so on, has meant a redefinition of what gays and lesbians are. So I think around the world, everybody understands, you know, a lesbian is a woman who's attracted to another woman. And a gay man is a man who's attracted to another man. That's all plain and simple. As soon as you start saying, oh, hang on, whether you're a woman or a man, that's not biology. No, that's what's in your head. So a man who says that he's a woman can be a lesbian. And if you take this to its logical extreme, two men who both define as women can call themselves a lesbian couple. So this is not just Stonewall's view, but it's the view of all these, what we call TQ plus organizations all over the world. The entire gay rights movement has been taken over by this peculiar notion that instead of sexual orientation, you are, some people are attracted to others of the same gender. And what this word gender means, you know, we don't know. So we decided, Kate Harris and I, separately, Kate Harris had been involved as a volunteer fundraiser for Stonewall. She always says Stonewall was in my blood. She loved Stonewall. It was a wonderful organization. And she felt this as a terrible betrayal that Stonewall, the organization that had done so much for gays and lesbians, was now turning its back on them and instead embracing this peculiar notion that everyone has a gender identity, that gender identity matters more than your sex, and that sexual orientation is simply a matter of gender. And it's been terrible for women's rights. I think everybody's seen that. But it's also been really terrible for the rights of lesbians in particular. and gay men. And so we decided, we tried both individually, we didn't know each other, but we had tried individually to contact Stonewall and say, look, what you're doing, this direction you've gone in, it's really bad for lesbians in particular. It's bad for gay men too. Let's talk about a better way forward. And they just blanked us. For years, they carried on saying, no debate, no debate, as if we were proposing something horrible, as if we were racists or anti-Semites or, you know, hateful people. Whereas we were simply saying, hang on, the rights of lesbians, the rights of gay men are being trampled on as soon as you start saying what sex you are or what gender you are, and people are all mixed up about those words, is in your head. Anyway, they wouldn't talk to us. And so eventually we decided in October 2019, we held a sort of secret meeting. It was a secret meeting because we knew that people would be, that we would be attacked by the, what I call the gender identity zealots. They call themselves trans rights campaigners. I don't really think it's about trans rights. It's about imposing on the rest of us this weird idea that everybody's, it's like Andrew Doyle has described it as a religion, the idea that everybody has a gender identity and that that's the most important thing and everybody's got to respect someone else, what somebody else says they are. Anyway, we decided that we would form a new organization. It was a secret meeting of 70 people. We had selected each one according to what they had been saying in public, that we thought that they would agree with us in wanting to protect actual LGB rights instead of this newfangled identity thing. And we had a meeting at Conway Hall, 70 people, and Alison Bailey, black lesbian lawyer, tweeted about it later that evening, and all hell broke loose. It broke loose. It was around the world. We received hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of messages of support, of thanks, especially from lesbians around the world, saying, thank God you've arrived. When are you for setting up in Canada? When are you setting up in France? When are you setting up in New Zealand? It was astonishing. We were completely unprepared for this. We wanted to start slowly. It was just the two of us. We had no money. We had no support. We paid from our own personal money for the hire of the hall and for some security in case the meeting leaked out. We had nothing. But we had our knowledge and our belief and the knowledge that we must revive the gay rights movement. It was being overwhelmed by, you can call it a religion or an ideology or something that we didn't share. And we knew that this was particularly bad for lesbians. So we started off, and along with all the messages of support came incredible abuse. Christine Burns almost immediately tweeted out, and Christine Burns is quite an important gender identity zealot, LGB Alliance is a hate group, pass it on. And they did pass it on. And Owen Jones, with a million followers, also passed it on. And so all over the internet, we haven't done anything or said anything, but we were branded a hate group. And all we are is a group that is actually standing up for the same principles that Stonewall used to stand up for all that time ago when it was still a gay rights organization. Now Stonewall is a trans rights organization, but it calls itself LGBT. All those organizations that call themselves LGBTQIA plus two spirit and whatnot, they are all actually trans organizations, or I would say gender identity organizations. Why do I say that? Because lots of trans people agree with us. They are fed up with all this aggression and pushing beliefs onto people, the terrible inroads that gender identity campaigners are making into women's sport, women's prisons. And it's making trans people look bad. It's making gay people look bad. It is not helping anybody. And we will overcome eventually, because once we get our message out, we know that most people agree with us and we are reasonable people. We have lots of trans supporters. We welcome them. I just hope that we can establish a better dialogue now, because this is about free speech. And no debate was a crazy, crazy idea. The idea that we could not discuss this. So we got charitable status. It took a year for the Charity Commission to go through our application. and decide that we were worthy of being a charity. But then our detractors thought, no, we can't have that, a charity. They launched a petition to stop us, to prevent us getting charitable status, and then to get rid of our charitable status, and eventually a court case. And so Mermaids, it's a trans youth charity, which advocates for puberty blockers, testosterone, mastectomies, and things for children who believe that they are the opposite sex, and we are opposed to those kinds of medical interventions in children. I think adults obviously have the right to do what they want, but children, puberty is an important thing to go through. We don't believe you should block it. And teenage years are very turbulent for many people. So Mermaids wanted us to get rid of our charitable status. And that court case was funded by a tax lawyer who dislikes us very much. And they lost on standing. They had no standing to, that means they had no legal right to make this challenge, and therefore, their case was dismissed, and we are still a charity, thank goodness, and we can start putting in the applications to foundations that only accept grants from charities. But I should say we're still, I think, almost £50,000 that we needed for the legal fees, which we, you know, had to raise separately from our ordinary money. To fight this case, because we think it's so important.
After the break, I'm going to come back to you and go on to some of these points you've made. Well done for the fight and winning this. I'm Alan Miller. I'm here with Bev Jackson, co-founder of LGB Alliance. This is TNT Radio. Join us just after this break.
TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
So Brandon Tate says some things that people don't like, and they don't like them because they're true. Understand this. I have every expectation that the government of Romania is doing this at the request of others. Could it be the government of the United Kingdom? I don't know. But I don't think that the government of Romania has done this of its own accord. They've arrested him and his brother, Brandon, for leading a group, his brother from belonging to the group, of men who convinced women to do TikTok videos so that the men could make the money from the TikTok video clicks. It's ludicrous on its face. And the women involved all say they're not victims of anyone. They're friends of Brandon. To which the government replies, aha, that's exactly how a trafficked woman would respond. That's exactly how a victim would respond. No. Despite your protestations, young woman, you're victims. Because we say you are, and we need you to be, so that we could prosecute Brandon and his brother on human trafficking charges. Kafkaesque doesn't begin to describe it, and yet here we are. Welcome to 2023.
The Reckoning with Timothy Shea on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in.
They trust TNT Radio
and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Alan Miller on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back, everyone. Bev, just beforehand, when you were describing what's happened, you had said something that's really interesting, that the achievements had been won historically, but there was this sense that perhaps some people just wanted to carry on and some money was got, I think you said, from the Argus Foundation to add the T. I mean, just briefly, because it throws up a very big question about why certain, for instance, some people who are also older, who were very involved in gay liberation, the fights for equality of rights, people like Peter Tatchell as well, for instance, why they have a slightly different view, well, a very different view. But who are the people that are funding this? Just so we know, who is the Argus Foundation? And I suppose then the question is, how comes they've become so powerful and strong in institutions with these ideas? Why has it become such a strong force in your point of view?
Okay, so those are two different questions, and I do think the situation in America is slightly different from the situation in the UK. The Arcus Foundation and several other very, very wealthy foundations in the United States pump quite a lot of money into the gender identity business, the youth transition business. This is a $1 billion business. I've seen business plans projecting this at $1.4 billion over the next few years. Around the United States, about 15 years ago, there was only one clinic providing youth transition care. They call it care interventions, I would say. And now there are over 100. So in America, where healthcare is very much commercialized, it's business. A mastectomy is something it's a commodity you can sell. And if you've got confused teenagers who are willing to buy this commodity, then that's what they do. And Planned Parenthood, for instance, which used to be an organization which was mainly involved in giving contraception and ensuring that women who needed them could secure an abortion, now also hands out testosterone to young women without any psychological care. So that's America, and some of that money that is funding that youth transition business also comes to the UK. And I don't. I personally don't have very much knowledge about the funding, but some researchers have done a lot of work there and seen the money that comes in particular from the Arcus Foundation. So I don't want to talk too much about that. Now, your other question was how they have become so powerful. What is really so sad in the UK is that Stonewall, as I said, was just such a wonderful organization. I mean, everybody loved it. It did so much good in achieving equal marriage and adoption rights and so on for gay people, and getting same-sex marriage, that it just has a wonderful reputation in society, and it is built on that reputation. And people have not noticed, very sadly, that it has completely changed since 2015. It really should have changed its name to as I say, it's now a gender identity organization or a trans organization, it is in every part of UK life. There's an interesting three-part documentary or series of articles, I should say, in the Mail. The first part is today, and I would encourage people to look at that. That is about the influence of Stonewall on the UK public life throughout the health service. You'd think that the health service would understand the difference between men and women, but precisely in the health service, you see the most peculiar language being promoted and the most peculiar ideas being promoted within the NHS. Also within education, children are being taught from a very, very early age. They're given, for instance, picture books with a red crayon or with a blue wrapper. And this is supposed to explain that you might be a boy in a girl's body. I mean, we do not want children to be taught this. Yeah, if I say that, I'm accused of being an old dinosaur. Oh, get with the program. Come on. It's so old fashioned to say there are men and women. It is not old-fashioned, and there's nothing progressive about promoting the idea that some people are in the wrong body. No one is born in the wrong body. It's a very offensive idea, and it's particularly offensive for young children who are what we call gender nonconforming, another silly phrase, you know, girls who like to play with cars and boys who want to do knitting. I mean, why shouldn't girls and boys do whatever they want? But these days, if you're a girl with short hair and you like playing football, you will be asked at school, not just by your peers, but even by teachers, oh, are you trans? They think they're being kind, you see. They think they're thinking, oh, yes, maybe she's trans and she just needs some encouragement and help. And this is being promoted at schools. It's being promoted by the health service. It's being promoted very much online. And as you know, teenagers spend a lot of their time online on TikTok and YouTube. And there, but distressed kids are getting the idea, oh, maybe that they are really born in the wrong body and they need surgery and they need drugs in order to be their true selves. And it's a very shocking development that Stonewall, of all, when the Keira Bell case came out, this is a famous case of a young woman who had undergone testosterone and mastectomy, and realized when she was 22, 23 that this was a terrible mistake, and she had confused her sexual orientation with gender identity. And you'd think that when lesbians come forward, and I've met quite a few myself, and say they didn't receive good care, wouldn't you think that Stonewall would stand up for them? Because after all, you know, they're lesbians. Wasn't Stonewall once set up to take care of lesbians and gay men? But no, Stonewall is on the other side. Stonewall is on the other side of this argument, and there are competing rights here. And we see how difficult it is in the UK and around the world to make it clear there are competing rights here. Let's talk about them and not pretend that there's no competition going on here, that there's no competing rights, because it's lesbians in particular whose rights are being trampled on.
Very important.
I hope I answered your question.
Yes, well, you did. And I just, so everyone knows, I've posted that article that you mentioned, Bev. So that's the Daily Mail, first of three, as you said, the investigation. So the impact that Stonewall's still having on institutions. There were discussions about the influence Stonewall had on at the BBC and other areas. Yes. And it does seem like, opposed to the past where the work you did and many others did to convince both the public and policymakers of the need to, you know, observe liberty or civil rights, to win people over to those things in the public domain, whereas much of what we've seen in the last few years seems to be an attempt to take over or influence or dominate institutions without discussing these things with the public. I mean, that's been one of the things that's been most striking about a lot of this stuff. It's almost like a concerted strategy not to have a debate and discussion with the public to win them over, because it strikes me that the public have much more agreement and sympathy with your point of view, which, as we've seen you and some other very brave, often very brave women who've stood up and argued these things, that the public have not been aware as much of this going on, and actually have a lot more support from your view. Now, it does seem that there isn't an attempt to have these debates and discussions openly and democratically. I mean, would you agree with that?
Well, yes, absolutely. This is a free speech issue, and that's what we have said from the start. I mean, there's Kate Harris would say this whole attempt to bully us into adopting a particular belief system is an attack on the values of the Enlightenment. Reasoned argument, looking at the evidence, looking at facts. And the extraordinary thing is, with some guidance has now come out for the civil service saying that it should be all right for civil servants to say that there are only two sexes. Well, yes, I do think it should be all right. We are being depicted here as if we have some rather quaint, funny little minority view, whereas in fact, the vast majority of people in the UK and around the world know that there are two sexes, and those who try to confuse the issue by bringing in all sorts of peculiar anomalies are really just not helping anybody at all.
So I know that certainly from my experience with my son and taking him to school and how many things are taught, and he had partly education in America as well, and so it's very, very, some of these themes and issues were very, very dominant. But a younger generation where people often have been brought up to say that, you know, it's offensive if you say certain things, you don't want to upset people, and surely everyone should just, you know, get on and we shouldn't have these issues presented. With a younger audience, it would seem that there is a sense perhaps where people go, well, this is just like everyone should just, it's presented that everyone should just accept people as they are, and why is this issue like it is so toxic, let's say. And I think you've made the point earlier that it's almost like it's bullying and it's an attack on freedom. But often it's perceived that some people, often they use terms like the right or the far right or whatever it might be, are attempting to say that people can't have freedoms. It's actually a topsy-turvy discussion. It's presented that when you articulate these things, as you've been doing, that somehow that's an attack on other people's freedoms. Could you just explain simply why you think that's just a flawed argument, if you do.
Why it's a flawed argument that it's right wing to stand up for people's freedoms. We have seen a complete reversal of left and right wing politics, and we've almost seen them become meaningless on this issue. I now find myself often talking to people who agree with me on the issue of sex and gender, with whom I disagree on a wide variety of other subjects. I've been a progressive campaigner all my life. This is, of course, standing up for women's rights and standing up for gay rights has been depicted as hateful. And of course, this is nonsense. It's clever, isn't it? It's clever if you don't really have any sensible arguments to just depict those who disagree with you as hateful, because a lot of people don't have much time to think about this. They're busy thinking about all sorts of other issues that you've been discussing on your show, and they have maybe 1% of their attention to think about sex and gender, and their friends say you have to be kind, and so they think you have to be kind. But kindness to one group may mean actually trampling on the rights of somebody else. You have to actually take some time to look into what's going on. For instance, young sportswomen who are being intimidated, bullied, not to complain if they're forced to compete against men. Women prisoners who are not being allowed to speak out about how awful it is to be confined in small spaces in a prison with male people who have defined themselves as women. We are living in a topsy-turvy world where you're supposed to accept people's self-definition of themselves instead of what we all know to be true. So there's nothing wrong with speaking the truth. It is not hateful to speak the truth. And I would invite people to please look at our website, lgballiance.org.uk, where you can find more information about us. And please, if you're in London in October, do come to our conference on the 27th of October at the QE2 Centre. We always encourage vigorous debate there. It's open to the public. We are a charity. We are open to the public. We love to talk to people with different views. And that is healthy. In a democracy, you have to be able to talk to people with different views without becoming enraged as soon as someone says the wrong word.
I think it's very important, and we can repeat those at the end of the show, because I think it's really important that public debate and discussion is there. I suppose I find it really, really difficult. It's almost like a Lord of the Flies moment. It's a really tough thing to see that we've actually got now what basically boils down to. Often I've seen things like men in masks threatening to beat up women of whichever sexual orientation, like telling them to leave Bristol, or the actual physical attacks we've seen around Speaker's Corner and elsewhere. Obviously, we saw what was happening in Australia and New Zealand with Parker Posey and others. It's astonishing that on the one hand, what you say and argue can be described as actual violence, and at the same time, actual violence happens and it's presented as being acceptable. I wonder just in terms of this, I mean, you say that people are not as interested in this, but I would venture that particularly around the things you talked about before with early puberty blockers and the idea of physical operations and interventions and transitions, that is an enormous question, particularly when now parents are finding out that sometimes their children are being advised, not only advised not to speak to them, but there's new rules coming in some places saying that they should not speak to them. That whole separation of families and this kind of ideological idea that has long, like everlasting implications, I think that many people are enormously concerned about that.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And you mentioned Australia and New Zealand, which unfortunately have leapt ahead with gender self-ID, which is very, very bad for women. But of course, it is true that many people are concerned about these issues. But in particular, I think it does upset me that celebrities don't speak out. We often, I mean, in fact, every day we receive messages from people who agree with us but say, yes, unfortunately, I can't speak out. Because they know if they do speak out, that they will be cancelled, that their whole careers may be on the line. And that is unfortunately the way that this movement is exerting its power and bullying people into silence. That has to stop. That has to stop. And you need more courageous people to speak out to take the risk, because once more and more people speak out, the risk will gradually shrink. So this silence is a bit self-perpetuating, unfortunately. It is cowardice. I do blame political leaders in particular, leaders of political parties who just try and say, I have to say, quite mealy-mouthed thing when confronted with a question about what is a woman. By the way, you notice they're never asked about what is a man. This is a profoundly misogynistic movement. This is the most misogynistic period that I've seen in my lifetime. It's really quite shocking, especially to see it on the left. And you're right about young people. A young person in the Young Greens this morning or yesterday tweeted that the most important thing about the Green Party was to make sure that all the transphobes are gone. A transphobe is someone who believes that there are only two sexes and you can't change sex. That's the most important thing in the Green Party, is to get rid of all the transphobes. And so I tweeted back at this young man, that's funny, because I thought the most important thing about the Green Party was environmental legislation and, you know, getting good helping the environment along and finding ways of dealing with climate change. And I meet people who have left the Green Party over this, who are just so frustrated that this particular issue is taken over. And as you said, a sort of Lord of the Fly situation. It's these young zealots, I don't know, fanatics, whatever you want to call them, are bullying people, the older people, into silence. So this, as I come back to this, it's a free speech issue. People have to stop giving in to the bullies. They just have to get courage, especially people in positions of leadership, in political leaders, leaders of companies. Let's really stop this. Stop allowing the bullies to prevail. Stand up and speak the truth.
I'm Alan Miller. We're going to go to a quick break. I'm here with Bev Jackson, co-founder of LGB Alliance. Join us just after this break.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
I've talked a lot about the racism that has now become acceptable in the United States, racism against white people. I've discussed campus living arrangements that prohibit white students, job forums that list those who are welcome with one race notably absent from the invite, teachers unions that will ignore seniority of white teachers when it comes to laying them off. It goes on and on. Now comes this. There's a bill being pushed by Democrats in California that would make judges take the race of criminals into account when handing down a sentence. That's right, take race into consideration when handing down a sentence. This racist and surely unconstitutional bill was passed by the state house and is now in the Senate. Now, under the bill, courts would be making up for how minorities have been treated in the past by going easy on current minority criminals who come before the judges. White people would, of course, get no such special treatment, of course. I wish I was making this up, but I'm not. The sanctioning of racism continues to spread, and it needs to stop before it's too late. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
The Associated Press reported that tax findings for fiscal 2020 by the Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation list millions of dollars paid to entities controlled by relatives and close associates of then-executive director and co-founder Patrice Cullors. The IRS filings, the first and only public disclosure of the Black Lives Matter Foundation's finances, show that the non-profit took $76,872,002 in fiscal 2020, mainly in donations from corporate backers and individuals, and paid out $25,997,945 in grants to other non-profits and contractors. Cullors, the only board member listed on the 63-page filing, resigned as executive director in June 2021. She did so just weeks after 2 months of victims of police violence released a statement demanding that BLM GNF stop exploiting the deaths of their children to make money. The same month as the mother's statement was published, the New York Post revealed that Cullors and her wife had purchased four properties worth approximately $3 million between 2016 and 2021.
You're listening to The Alan Miller Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. I wanted to ask you, Bev, just on this question now. I mean, well, one question I've got, I don't know what the answer, you might not have the answer, but there is, for instance, Peter Tatchell is a similar generation to older people who've been challenging things. And he recently did something, a post saying there's no LGB without the T and the others' initials. I wonder, when you do you think it's, without personalizing it at all, but do you think it's about not having a campaign to run anymore? I mean, he's obviously done things that have been very brave in the past in Russia and elsewhere. But this question, have you addressed some of the, are you able to talk to people like Peter or others about these issues civilly, or has it just become so acrimonious with everyone?
That's interesting that you should ask that. I did call Peter Tatchell on the phone last year and tried to have a conversation with him, but he kept asking me questions about issues that LGB Alliance is not concerned with. He has defamed LGB Alliance so thoroughly and so frequently that it's really quite astonishing. He obviously doesn't know us. I don't know what his motive is in spreading lies about us, but it's really unpleasant. And so I think that he in particular is more interested in publicizing himself rather than the issues, but I'll just leave that there. But what I wanted to say about this slogan, there's no LGB without the T, if you just think about that, what does it mean? What does it mean, no LGB without the T? Does it mean, don't you dare have an LGB without the T? It's a sort of threat. Or is it saying, you're useless without us? If you don't have a T, you're just completely useless. You're nothing without us. What is it exactly saying, LGB without? It's saying you can't organize LGB people. LGB people are just people with same-sex sexual orientation or both sex sexual orientation. That's it. We don't have an agenda. We don't have any. It's just people who are attracted to others of the same sex. And we actually are saying, look, we don't belong with these people who are focused on their identity. If you think about it, LGB, what is it? It's sexual orientation. It's about relationships. It's about who you're attracted to, who you want to have sex with, and who you fall in love with and what have you. It's about relationships. Whereas the TQA plus, what's that plus, by the way? Never clear what the plus is, but quite a worrying plus. The TQ plus groups are all focused on themselves. There is a profound sort of narcissism, don't you think, about this movement, which seems to be, it's my identity. My pronouns are this, and I'm a pansexual on Tuesdays and multisexual on Thursdays and not non-gender at all. I mean, all these labels, I did do a bit of astrology when I was 19, and you learn lots and lots of jargon when you do astrological charts. It reminds me of that. I just don't know what it's got to do with gay rights and what it's got to do with society in general. Let's get rid of labels. For heaven's sake, let boys and girls grow up to develop their full potential away from all those horrible stereotypes that you used to find. There's a lot of homophobia which is underlying the gender identity movement. Again and again, you see parents saying, oh, my little boy, he used to play with dolls. And a very famous example of this is a little child called Kay Shapley, who's become a poster child for the youth gender movement. And you see, you can go online and see Kai's mother saying, when Kai was two, I saw the way that he was playing, and I thought, this child might be gay, and that could not happen. That would not happen. You see the fierce homophobia there, and then within a couple of years, Kai becomes this trans child, or is labeled a trans child, and then is given puberty blockers and the rest of it, and becomes this poster child for the trans child movement. There's a lot of homophobia there, and with lesbians as well. We hear from lesbians at school. I spoke to a lesbian the other day She's 19. She said throughout her secondary school period, she was told she must be a boy because she was attracted to girls. What is this? Does anybody seriously think this is progressive? It is the most regressive regime we've ever seen. We have to get rid of it. We have to encourage people to be themselves and to and revive the gay rights movement, which shows that it is respectable and it is absolutely fine. It's wonderful to be gay or lesbian. You don't have to change your body parts or undergo any kind of medicalization to be gay. Something has gone deeply wrong with the gay rights movement, and we are trying to put it right.
Well, I was on this issue of rights and self-ID as we're getting towards the end of the show. I wanted to address this because in many ways, for myself, just me, but I've always thought many of these things would be fantastic if we didn't have to have them debated in public and it was just a matter of our privacy, of our own choices. Who one chooses to love or sleep with or marry, that really should be our own choice. But that's something that does rub up against a lot of things. You mentioned Section 28, which was Clause 28 in the 80s and the 90s, and the idea of no promotion of materials or issues to do with homosexuality and others that the government at the time, the Conservative government, had been pushing, and the fight against that. But my question would be a little bit that now there's this idea of self-identification, and it does seem to transgress all our ideas of factual reality, right? I could say I'm a handbag, and we've seen ridiculous examples of this in a school where a girl was saying, I want to identify as a cat, and the teacher supporting that and children arguing against it. But this kind of breakdown of any sense of a universal understanding of meaning, of science and all of that. But there were some things, weren't there? There were some, like, well, it's a question I suppose I've got for you, Bev, which is this. In the time of if people come from fighting oppression, and there might be, let's say, there's a slightly ghettoized experience of that, some of the manifestations or the representations of that did seem, I mean, just from an outsider's point of view, let's say, they seem to promote certain things. Like, it seemed like transvestites singing at clubs, this kind of, a bit of a parody, maybe a bit superficial. It wasn't just about people of the same sex loving each other, but also there was a bit of a paraphernalia, and sometimes that got enforced with vigor somewhat. I wonder how much that type of idea that this was part of it, that it was a kind of a bit of a caricature of what same-sex love or attraction meant, that almost is the thing that got then embodied more and presented more, a sort of caricature of itself, or have I completely missed that? Have I got that wrong?
Well, I mean, transvestites and drag has always been a part of gay male culture. And I used to enjoy drag shows. Drag shows are adult entertainment. They have absolutely no place with children. Whoever thought that drag queens who live in a really highly sexualized world, quite frankly, surrounded by drugs and lots of interesting sexual activity, what on earth possessed people to think that they should be going into schools and reading to children? I've no idea. I mean, if they want to go and read to old people who are quite lonely and who would probably welcome the interesting and colourful company, that might be a lovely idea. But I don't know why anybody thinks that it's very, very harmful for little girls in particular to be confronted with what you say are caricatures. I have nothing against drag shows as adult entertainment, but why you would be promoting this with children, I have no idea. It's not something which I think is helpful, and it certainly doesn't promote a good picture of LGBT people. I don't see, just ordinary lesbians going into school reading stories. Why not? Why on earth is it promoted as an LGBT? This is what I mean by mixing up LGB with the TQ+. The things have nothing to do with each other. If you want to promote good images of LGB people to children, you should have quite ordinary LGB people talking about their careers and their lives and their relationships and their children, so that children can see, oh yes, it's absolutely fine to be gay or lesbian, and not caricatures of women that really belong in sex clubs.
So my before we come back to you saying again where people can come to, one of the arguments that's made is that historically the challenge for gay and lesbian rights was that people would say it's not just immoral, but it was against the family values. It would inculcate. Appeal to young people that maybe just be confused during adolescence, and it might not be that that's what they were about. And the whole question of are people inherently of something, or is it kind of socially also constructed? These are all discussions, and now it seems that, as you say, there's much more of a consensus that in society that people agree that same-sex marriage is there, and everything. But that was a big fight, and it was also against the idea of let's say some of the ideas that people who are more religious, Judeo-Christian trajectory, and how the church played, and many of those institutions have changed their views. But some would argue that the same arguments are being made now. What's your philosophical and practical argument against that? That it's not the same thing as just challenging institutions or the ideas that we've currently got, that it's just, you've made the point about biological sex, but why is it so much profoundly different to the arguments that were being made 20, 30 years ago, when many said a similar thing? They criticized the arguments you were making in a similar way.
I think what you're saying is some people are saying that the resistance to gender identity, or what's called wrongly trans rights, is a bit like the resistance there used to be to gay and lesbian rights. Is that what you're saying? You're saying
that's
it's
right.
Really,
yes,
more of the, yeah, more of the same sort, yeah, of thing. No, well, it isn't the same sort of thing. It's quite the opposite, because as I said, people are gay or lesbian, whether they're born that way or it's partly culture, nature and nurture. I'm not going to go down that path. I don't think it's terribly important. But it certainly is true that you can't change someone's sexual orientation. You can't change someone's sexual orientation, and you shouldn't try to. That is conversion therapy. You should not do that. I'm totally, totally opposed to that. But this is completely different from what we're saying into the resistance to gender identity. What we're saying here is some people are telling kids you're born in the wrong body. Well, objecting to that is not the same, and it isn't conservative, and it isn't right wing to say, wait a minute, you shouldn't be telling children you can be born in the wrong body. It's a completely different movement. And the people that are trying to get this confused and say, the resistance to what they call trans rights is just another form of the resistance to gay and lesbian rights, that's completely upside down. And you can see in Iran, for instance, if you where it's criminal offense, you can even get a death sentence in Iran for being gay, but you can get out of your prison sentence if you undergo a sex change. So you can see there that the things are opposed. A sex change is a way to get out of being gay. So these things are not the same. I think the same applies in Pakistan. The fight against the imposition of self-ID is a fight against an ideology. Gays and lesbians, we're not an ideology. We're just people with a certain sexual orientation. It's not a belief system. We don't want to impose anything on society other than to get on with our own lives and to have our own relationships. But we do not impose on other people languages, certain languages, words that they ought to use, ways of behaving. And what is really very different, I think, about what they call the trans rights movement, I would say, as I say, the gender identity movement, is the way that they insist on invading other people's spaces. No, lesbians can't have our own spaces anymore. You have to accept people who are the opposite sex. Gay men can't have their own spaces anymore. They have to accept women. This is an assault on the rights of gays and lesbians. And so it is very, very unproductive to put these groups together, because there are different rights going on here, and we need to be able to talk about that. I see the gender identity movement as a really regressive movement. And it's been very clever in presenting itself as a civil rights movement and progressive. It is the opposite. It is absolutely the opposite. And it is also because it's linked constantly with LGB, it's really having a bad influence on public understanding and acceptance of gay people, because they think that it's got something to do with us. It doesn't have anything to do with us. It isn't. Gays and lesbians do not want women's sport to be ruined and so on.
Bev, I want to say, I get a lot of different campaigners on here and we talk about them. And I want to say congratulations on fighting back and being able to articulate these things. I think it's really important for the public domain. Just quickly again, why don't you let us know the handles, people can follow you, and tell us about the October event before we go to the news.
Yes, absolutely. So please go to our website, lgballiance.org.uk. Please come to our conference at the QE2 Centre in London on the 27th of October. You can reach out to me. I'm on Twitter at Bev Jackson Orth, and at Alliance LGB is the Twitter handle of LGB Alliance. And so look forward to hearing from you. And once again, thank you so much, everyone around the world who has supported us. We really, really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, Bev. I'm Alan Miller. This is TNT Radio. Stay free. We want free speech, free debate. We want the public involved in this together. We'll see you next week, same time. All the best.